A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P, Q, R, S, T. Little Beach Boys intro for you to celebrate the end of summer. It's a fine week here in Lake Wobegon, actually, suburb of Denver. The weather has turned a little colder. Had to use the heat in my car yesterday morning, which is fantastic because William loves it when it becomes fall. Not only because that means football is back, but because, well, he loves fall. He also enjoys talking about himself in the third person, but I'll stop now. So anyway, we'll jump right into this particular podcast episode, if you remember. And why wouldn't you? You pay attention, don't you? Pay attention. I am reading Uptown Girl, the screenplay that I wrote many, many millions of years ago. And as I recall from 2 weeks ago when I read the first third of the script, it's not as bad as I was expecting. And I was certainly enjoying myself. And we'll see if I can remember how everybody's voice goes. I remember that Eric's grandmother is being played by Katharine Hepburn, and that Link, his friend Link, is, you know, is a Cockney fellow. So we'll see how that goes. Cordelia's mother and father, their voices may have changed in the last 2 weeks, because I honestly have no strong recollection of what they sounded like. But Maggie Blake, no, that's not Maggie. She's, you know what, I'll figure it out when I get there. Meanwhile, just as a recap, it's a fairly unimaginative romantic comedy. And Eric and Cordelia met by accident in the park, and it turns out that she is very rich and he is very poor, and neither of them is aware of the other's social status, and they are going to have their first date. And, Maggie's mother is very distant, and father is very important, and we haven't seen anything about Eric's father or mother, and since I wrote this long ago, I don't even remember what I said about that. We'll probably find out as we go. So, without further ado, here is part two of Uptown Girl. Just to really catch you up, Maggie, Cordelia is our main lead. Eric's the lead, and Cordelia, in a romantic comedy, which one is really the most important, the guy or the girl? We'll assume the girl is. So Cordelia is our lead, Eric is our other lead, and Maggie is Cordelia's best friend, and Cordelia, is making Eric wait down in the foyer before her date. Cut to interior, Worthington foyer, night. Worthington, that's Cordelia's last name. A butler opens the door, and Eric Mahoney steps into the land of the rich. He looks wary and unbelieving and a little scared. Boy, do I not belong here. Robert Worthington, that's Cordelia's dad, comes in from another room, smiling politely. Eric, good evening, I'm Cordelia's father, Robert Worthington. Sir? They shake hands. I must say it's a pleasure, young man. Anyone who can make my daughter as happy as she's been in the past 24 hours has got to be worth meeting. Eric's still taking in the furnishings. He's a little distracted, but he hears Mr. Worthington's words and blushes just a bit. Good luck with the actor pulling that off. I want you to blush, but only a little bit. Thank you. You said, Worthington? Only last name we have, son. As in, Worthington Computing? Anything worth doing.
It's worth doing on a Worthington.
Yes, well, I had a hand or three in creating the company. Actually, I was the only employee for 10 years, would you believe that? He looks around at the expanse. We're a long way from that garage in Chicago.
To say the least.
Well, you've succeeded in creating a favorable first impression, young man. They're both quiet for a minute. Say, Cordelia's a bit spoiled, and I can promise you it'll be another 15 minutes before she even thinks about coming down. Would you like a tour of the house? Eric thinks about this, finally raising his eyebrows and smiling in disbelief.
Absolutely.
They walk out, Eric trying not to gape behind his host's back. Gaping is something people did in the late 90s. You can Google it. Cut to interior. Okay, so as I figured out last time, for some reason, I have written down Luke's Volkswagen. Lute's Volkswagen. Lute is Eric's best friend. He was knighted, and it made sense
sort of in my head 15 years ago. Anyway, he's an older gentleman, he's English, he's been knighted, and the way I wrote the script, he has a phone in his Volkswagen. But since everybody on this side of the script is supposed to be poor, we're going to make it that he's in his office. Right. So, interior, Luke's office, day. The phone rings in Luke's home. See, I even wrote down Luke's home, even though I just said he's in his Volkswagen. He puts down the Batman comic, of all things, that he's reading, and picks up the receiver. Sir Pinckney.
Lude.
Eric. What the devil are you calling for? Aren't you supposed to be courting the young lady? Cut to interior, Worthington's study, day. Eric is speaking quietly on one of the phones in a plush study. We see Cordelia's daddy intently watching stock quotes on the other side of the room.
We're still waiting for her to come downstairs. I'm being given a tour of the house.
And?
This place is amazing and slightly insane. When I walked into the study just now, the door actually said, "Good evening, Mr. Worthington," and then, "Good evening, guest." I've never been in a house where the door knew your name.
Even the Queen's house didn't have that. Don't know what bloody use it would be.
Anyway, my suspicions were correct. I think Miss Cordelia is about as close to royalty as it gets in this country.
Cut to interior, Luke's office, night. I have to keep changing Volkswagen to office in my head.
And what does that really have to do with anything?
Everything, Lute. You know that.
I most certainly do not know that.
Sorry, gotta go.
The phone clicks, and Lute looks at it for a moment before putting it down. He picks up his comic book again.
Huh, close to royalty. Like he would have the slightest idea.
Cut to interior, Worthington study, night. Eric puts down the phone as Mr. Worthington walks over. Not calling Japan, are you?
I don't know Japanese.
Mr. Worthington laughs. Come on, son. I think my daughter just might be ready for you. They walk out of the study, and as they pass the doorway, a computerized voice speaks quietly.
Good evening, Mr. Worthington.
Good evening, guest.
Eric gives the door a look and shakes his head. Cut to interior, Worthington lobby, night. We sweep up the long stairs to the upper landing, where Cordelia is standing in all her elegance. She looks beautiful. She also looks a little annoyed. The foyer is empty. Her father and Eric come in from the side.
Had no idea you could play polo indoors. That's really amazing.
Well, I actually invented the indoor version. We're still trying to get it to catch on. It's not all that different from the regular way once the horses get used to. They both stop walking and talking when they look up to see that she's waiting. We see close in on Cordelia's and Eric's eyes as they get their first good look at each other since the park.
My goodness.
Wow.
Cordelia almost smiles, then remembers that she's annoyed.
That's more like it.
She descends the stair gracefully and slowly. She doesn't look at her feet. She looks right into his eyes. About the time she reaches the ground floor, Eric comes out of his trance.
Wow.
You already said that.
If you'd been dressed like that, I would have caught you.
She gives up and smiles.
If I'd been dressed like this, I wouldn't have climbed the tree.
You look marvelous, dear. Have a nice time?
Cordelia accepts a kiss on the cheek from her father.
I will. Don't buy any small countries while I'm gone.
Only the big ones, dear.
He smiles at Eric and walks away.
Shall we?
Eric takes the arm she's offering, but she can see that something isn't right.
What is it?
Ever worry that somebody you meet, that you won't be enough for them?
Yes.
He looks right at her.
Are you absolutely sure I'm the guy you want to spend the evening with?
Yes.
Eric seems to have some courage back, and they start walking down the long front path towards the 34 Ford that's waiting at the circular drive.
Tell me what you're thinking, Eric.
You don't want to know.
Eric, please.
They stop.
I want to be here with you. I want to spend this evening with you. It's the money, right? Of course it is. Do you have any clue how many dates have gone badly because of how rich my father is?
No, I'm sure I don't.
A whole heaping lot of them, that's how many. Eric, Last week in the park, was there anything between us? Anything worth going after?
Yeah.
So please, do us both a favor. If you can, just forget about all of this.
She waves a hand behind her.
I'm sorry my daddy's rich, okay? But that doesn't change who I am, or who I was last week.
Cordelia, you don't know.
No, I don't. I'm asking you to try anyway.
He thinks about it, and then laughs, embarrassed.
What?
I'm not certain I can afford to pay for dinner tonight.
Which doesn't make you any less of a nice guy. You know that, don't you?
Eric doesn't look too sure. She keeps going.
So we've got three choices. We can go to the nice, if expensive, place I had in mind, if you'll let me pay for dinner.
Not a chance.
Okay, fairly sexist of you, but we'll let it pass. Second choice, we go wherever you would like to.
Like I'm going to take Robert Worthington's daughter to Burger King?
Without hesitation, Cordelia hauls off and slaps Eric, medium hard.
Stop it! Stop looking at me and seeing nothing but my father and his money.
I don't know how.
Well, why didn't you say so?
She reaches up and he rears back, away from the slap that he thinks is coming, but she grabs his shoulders and kisses him for a brief five-alarm moment. Then she lets go, leans her forehead against his, and speaks quietly.
Eric Mahoney, I will gladly go with you to any Burger King in the state of California. Or there's a third option.
Which is?
You get in your car and go, and I walk back into that stupid mansion, cry for 3 weeks, and lose all faith in humanity.
Eric considers his options. He traces a finger down her cheek.
All faith? All of it.
He thinks again while we wait, breathless, for his answer.
You really don't know how difficult this is, or why, but I'll give it my best shot. Because? Because there's something here worth going after.
And because if I pick door number 3, I'm afraid you'll slap me again.
Perceptive of you.
They start walking yet again. Cordelia waves at the car.
And who says you don't do all right?
That's a classic car somebody's put a lot of time and money into.
Yeah, it's not mine.
I'm glad it's dark out, so you can't see how embarrassed I am.
Oh, and here I was looking forward to seeing you blush. Again.
You'll get more chances.
They reach the car.
Car belongs to my boss.
He thought I shouldn't take a lady around town in an aging Corolla that only starts at night. He says this as he opens the door for her, and she looks right at him. A close moment.
I like his attitude, but believe me, Eric, I wouldn't have minded.
I'm trying to believe you. As hard as I can. She nods, and he shuts the door behind her, runs around to the other side. Cut to interior, 34 Ford, night. Eric gets in and starts the car.
Only starts at night?
Lute calls her the Vampire Mobile.
She laughs. Fade to interior, Burger King, night. A love song plays over a muted set of shots. Apparently there's a way to mute shots. I don't know. I have a film degree and everything, but don't ask me what I meant by that. Eric and Cordelia standing in line. The pair solemnly placing paper crowns on each other's head. I can just see the actress reading that and loving it. Cordelia with mayonnaise on her face. Two young people having the time of their lives. I could just write a note here saying, do a montage that doesn't suck like what I wrote down. Fade to exterior, Worthington home, night. Eric and Cordelia walk back up to the mansion, much more at ease than when they left. He makes a joke while we are still too far away to hear, and she laughs at it. They're still wearing the crowns. Sure they are. Finally, they stop before her front door. She leans against it and smiles that special smile of hers again. It's just as beautiful as last time.
I owe my friend Maggie $20.
Why's that?
She said that I would have a wonderful time.
You bet against that happening? Take thy dagger from out my breast, will you?
You have breasts?
Well, not in comparison.
Ooh, don't let Daddy hear you talk like that.
Why? What'll he do? Buy out my company?
Ooh, she's not gonna like that. Turning the page, she's suddenly frosty. Pulls off the crown, which prompts him to remove his. They don't do frosties at Burger King. That's a Wendy's thing. All right, I'll stop joking.
Stop doing that.
I'm sorry.
Anyway, the reason I always bet against my dates is so I know I'll get something out of the evening. Even if it bites, I still make $20.
How often do you win?
Before tonight?
Every time.
He looks surprised and doesn't say anything. Every other guy I've ever dated was after my body or my father's money. Not necessarily in that order.
She traces his face with a finger. Everybody's tracing faces. This is amazing. Maybe they're blind.
If I'm not mistaken, you're more concerned with finding out who I really am.
I'd like to find that out myself.
You are wonderful. Everything about you amazes me. I just wish I could forget, Cor.
I wish I could make you forget.
I wish I could make you understand that it doesn't really matter.
Anyway, think I could bet Maggie another 20 next week?
He looks down, then up again.
Yeah, let's do it.
I was hoping you'd say that.
Don't try for another kiss. You already got yours for the evening.
As you wish.
That's the idea.
She smirks at him and offers a handshake. He takes her hand very gently in his fingers and kisses it.
I didn't think guys did that anymore. Suddenly I'm very warm. I better go.
She turns and goes for the doorknob. No luck. Locked out.
Your dad's that interested in getting rid of you?
Security measures. Daddy probably thought I had my keys with me.
Rummaging through her purse, she comes up with a garage door opener.
Fortunately, I try to be prepared.
So you're a Boy Scout?
Oh, must you?
She points at the Worthington garage, facing the driveway at an angle to the front door. At her command, the massive 5-car-across garage door starts rolling upwards. Because apparently that's a thing. Eric gapes at the cars. Gleaming Ferrari and Bentley and Maserati and classic Corvette. And there's a second, shadowy, expensive row behind the first.
Car heaven.
Huh? Oh, the garage? It's just a bunch of automobiles, Eric. How can you drool like that?
How can you not?
They're just cars. I don't get it.
That's the problem.
She shrugs and walks away.
Discuss it next week, huh?
Yeah.
He watches while she steps into the garage, waves, and then the door starts sliding closed again. Eric's gaze takes in the disappearing cars, and then the mansion, the grounds.
I'm sorry, Cor. I just can't do this.
Cut to interior, Worthington home, night. Now inside the foyer, by the front door, we see Cordelia looking out the window. Over her shoulder, we see Eric walking away.
I'm never going to hear from you again, am I?
Fade to exterior, Lute's junkyard, day. We move down the street and into the junkyard, past piles of many and varied stuff. Every 7 to 10 seconds, in the background, is a sharp cracking sound. The sounds continue as we creep up on Lute's Volkswagen. Cut to... Okay, so apparently Lute's office is in his Volkswagen. I made that obvious earlier. Interior, Lute's Volkswagen, day. We see Lute trying to use a variety of ancient adding machine to tally up the monthly bills. It's obviously wearing on him, pencil clenched in his teeth, sweat beating on his brow, and the rhythmic cracking noise we hear every 7 to 10 seconds isn't helping.
Office supplies, carried a 3. Crack! £5, 6 for charitable donations. Crack! Bloody Girl Scouts. What in the world is going on out there?
He jumps out of his chair. Cut to exterior, Lute's junkyard, day. We follow Lute as he walks, annoyed, around piles of old cars and refrigerators, towards the source of the noise. It's finally revealed. As we and Lute watch, Eric Mahoney spins a vice grip set on top of an oil barrel so that it closes on one end of a computer keyboard, holding it upright. Then he hauls off with a baseball bat and smacks the keyboard into 2 pieces, the top half spiraling out into a pile of junk. Then he loosens the vise, throws the other half after the first, and picks up another keyboard.
More supposed to sell those half off, then.
Eric looks up, but doesn't react. He just spins the vise shut again and swings.
Crack!
Lute has had enough. He walks over as Eric picks up another keyboard, sets it in place, and prepares for more batting practice. He gets in the way of Eric's swing.
Damn it, Lute!
Oh, I'm sorry. Am I getting in the way of you destroying the inventory? Shall I step back and observe while you go crazy over her?
They look at each other for a long moment. Eric still threatening Lute with the bat.
It's all wrong, Lute. If I knew where God was, I swear, man, I'd...
Well, I'm sure you'd really frighten him.
Come on, son.
Your grandmother wants to Stephenson's old sofa in by the bathroom. Put all that energy to good purpose, huh?
Eric turns away. He drops the bat to the ground.
I saw that sofa. I'm not sure I have enough energy left.
Yeah, well, we'll give it the old high school Troy.
It's a joke, but Eric glares daggers at his friend, because that one hit too close to home.
Right, bollocks that. Sorry, lad.
Cut to exterior. Eric's house. Day. Without another word, Eric leaves the barrel and the car yard behind, walking across the dusty ground towards a fairly nice old leather sofa sitting by the Mahoney's ragged back porch.
You realize she's napping?
After that racket you were making.
She doesn't hear that well.
And she won't hear this, not if we're quiet. But she said move the couch in, and move it we will.
Yavol.
That's the spirit.
The two start lifting one section of the couch. It's fairly heavy, and tips a few times. But finally, they start moving towards the back door.
Somebody threw this out?
Shame what people think is junk, eh?
As they struggle, Lute glances up at his friend.
So what a batting practice. She's great, Lute. The most wonderful girl I've ever met. More than I'd ever dreamed I'd find. She has to live up in the hills.
They get to the back door, and Lute opens it just after he finishes speaking.
She's not an angel, boy. She's a person. Didn't she herself keep telling you that the money didn't matter?
She...
Cut to interior. Eric's house. Day. Eric has to silence himself as they move inside, right past the open door where we see Graham's Mahoney sleeping peacefully. In struggling silence, the two move the couch across the floor, finally easing it into place. Still silently, they straighten and walk out. Cut to exterior. Eric's house. Day. Eric finally gets to finish his thought while the two move to pick up the next section.
She told me 1,000 times that money didn't matter. It was the theme of the evening.
So?
So it does matter.
He stops while they hoist the couch piece and begin struggling back to the house.
You can both talk all you want to about what a person is on the inside. What really matters in this world is what you bring to the table, man. Maybe I do have a great heart. Of course you do. My great heart won't keep Cordelia in Birkenstocks, or Lamborghinis.
They're at the porch, and again Lute finishes speaking just as he opens the door.
So, rather than taking a chance, hoping that she's speaking truth, you'd just rather take the coward's way out and call her a lawyer.
Cut to interior, Eric's house, day. Again the two wobble past the open door. Eric glares in frustration at Lute, who smirks at his own cleverness. In silence, they place the piece, stand up again, and walk out. Cut to exterior, Eric's house, day. As they head for the last and biggest piece of the couch, Eric finally gets to respond.
How could it be true? Maybe the lady doesn't lie, Lute, but maybe, just maybe, she hasn't really thought about it.
Lute stops before picking up the last piece to take a long look at Eric.
You really are serious about her?
Eric shakes his head, and they strain to get the last, longest couch piece hoisted, making their way one final time towards the house.
There's not the slightest point in being serious about Cordelia, my dear Lieutenant Pinckney. We have no future together. Oh, that's Sir Pinckney, thank you. And what is the real problem here? Your pride not letting you accept the riches she might be willing to offer? Or that fear deep inside you that says the lady must disappear once she comes to her senses?
Eric doesn't speak, but he looks at Lute like a man haunted. Luke pulls his trick one more time, without thinking about it or what he's saying.
Good lord, this last bit's gonna send me off. Cordelia sounds like a wonderful woman. I don't think you need to worry. But, Eric, whoever or whatever the girl is, I promise you, she's not your mother.
This last is said, of course, just as the door opens. But the look from Eric this time is sudden, fierce, and white-hot rage. Cut to interior, Eric's house, day. The veins in his neck straining, his face bright red, his jaw clenched, Eric moves in tandem with Lute until they get the piece into the right spot. Then he turns and walks out of the house as fast as he can. Cut to Exterior. Eric's house. Day. Stalking down the steps, across the dusty ground, Eric disappears in the direction of the oil drum and his bat. Lute comes out of the house and follows, shouting softly once he's sure the door is closed.
Eric.
Cut to exterior. Lute's junkyard. Day. We go with Lute around the corner and stop with him as we see Eric, bat in hand, with his back to us.
Oh, Eric, I didn't...
Just as Lute tries to step forward and speak, Eric whirls around and speaks his mind, his voice rising to a scream, every word punctuated with a slam on the side of the barrel.
Don't you ever mention my mother!
After the last word, the most savage strike of all, and the bat shatters. Eric is crying, he's panting, and he finally looks up to meet Lute's eyes with nothing more to say. His friend's eyes are full of compassion and frustration because he can't make it better.
Lute, I'm sorry.
And he turns and walks off, leaving Eric to go back to his rage. Eric looks at the keyboard set up on the barrel, waiting to be batted away, and then at the broken handle in his hand. He tosses the handle away and walks up to the barrel, and we get our first good look at the keyboard, which is unremarkable, save for the large, gold-lettered Worthington logo scrawled grandly on the upper left side. With a frustrated scream, Eric slams a fist into the keyboard.
So violent.
Jump cut to interior, Worthington gym, day. A fist slams into an Everlast punching bag, but the badly aimed punch slips off and almost hits Cordelia in the face.
Watch it! Sorry.
The Worthington gym is predictably well-equipped and tastefully expensive. Again, the dollar sign replaces the S in expensive. Maggie and Cordelia are dressed in workout gear. Cordelia is trying to hold the punching bag for Maggie. She almost starts laughing as Maggie keeps throwing strange punches and kicks that almost never connect with the bag. Finally, a badly aimed kick throws off Maggie's balance so completely that she falls to her butt.
Where do you pick this stuff up?
It's one Jackie Chan movie. Did you like it?
What possible good would that do you in a fight?
Who's talking about fighting? I just want to look good.
Yeah, you look great.
She steps over her friend and walks to the minibar, getting a cranberry juice. Maggie gets herself up off the floor and joins Cordelia at a drink.
Can I ask you a question?
If I said no, would that stop you?
Why are we here beating each other up on a...
Wow, okay, she turned into Lute.
Why are we here beating each other up on a Friday night?
Strike that. I'm here because Seth turned out to be just another jerk.
Ha, that's funny. Somebody in my small group is named Seth. But I wrote this 15 years ago, so, you know, nothing personal.
And those punches you're making fun of? He didn't find the one I gave him so funny.
Why are you here?
Because you're such a stimulating conversationalist.
Cordy.
Because he never called.
Right, that's why.
And he's not going to, sweetheart.
That's what I'm trying to get across here. He's just another guy. Another member of the opposition.
Opposition?
You make it sound like we're all at war. Maggie just looks at her.
Okay, in most cases I'd agree with you, but not this one. That's the worst part, Cordy. I think you're right. He is different.
And he still didn't call.
They leave their drinks and move over to the weightlifting equipment. Cordelia starts a butterfly press at a respectable weight. She's pushing herself. Maggie, on the other hand, starts doing leg lifts without putting the handle in, so she's just lifting the padded bar.
You can't, girl. There's just no way to harmonize your worlds.
I don't know what happened to Maggie's accent. She's not the main character, so who cares?
I told him the money didn't matter.
Oh, to you, I'm sure it doesn't. You probably don't even think about it. To you, it's nothing.
To him, it's everything. I kind of hoped.
What?
You remember The Little Mermaid?
The story of the movie.
The movie?
Of course.
I thought maybe it could be like that somehow.
Where are you going to find a dancing crab?
Shut up. I mean, how the mermaid, what's her name, she gave up everything, left her whole world behind just for love. Why couldn't it work like that?
Cordy, did you ever read the actual fairy tale?
No, I was busy passing law review. Why?
In the real version, Ariel gives up all she knows, sure, but it doesn't work out. This wonderful, rich prince of hers goes after some other woman. In the end, she dies alone.
Cordelia stops her exercise, That's completely true, by the way. If you're a fan of the Disney movie, don't read the original. Cordelia stops her exercise, looking at herself in the floor-to-ceiling mirror. Maggie continues her almost useless pumping, still talking.
She gave up her whole world for nothing. I'm not saying Eric's not a great guy, Cor, but...
Again with the accent.
But if you expect him to call, you better hope he never read the real story.
Cordelia looks like she's about to have a good cry. Cut to exterior, City Park, day. We're looking high up in the park trees, and yeah, the red kite is right where we left it. No little boy, though. As we move down the tree, we see Cordelia Worthington stretching against it, getting ready for a jog. She also casts a wary glance up into the tree, shakes her head, and moves off down the path. It's a gorgeous day, and we jog along with Cordelia for a moment, until she looks ahead and slows to a stop. 50 yards down the path, Eric Mahoney is jogging towards her. When he sees her, he also stops. For a moment or two, they just look at one another across the distance.
Oh, God, don't make me chase you.
After another tense moment, Eric gestures towards a park bench, midway between them both, a bit removed from the path. Cut to exterior, park bench, day. And they reach it at the same time.
Afternoon.
Hi.
Kid's not up the tree again, is he?
No, I checked.
That's good.
You know why I came to this park last month, rather than the rich, fancy parks up where I live?
Can't say as I do.
Because it was close to a new coffee shop. Everybody kept telling me I should try out. No other reason. He doesn't say anything, or look at her. You know why I came back to this park today?
I can't imagine.
Why didn't you call? You promised you would call.
You're saying you really wanted me to?
Yes!
Whatever for?
Eric. Most of the guys I've tried to go out with just wanted to get at my father's money. I've had marriage proposals from guys I didn't even know, hoping for this huge dowry.
Looking out over the park, she sighs, thinking about it.
The last guy didn't want Daddy's money. He already had his own umpteen billion-dollar company.
So why aren't you with him?
Because he tried to rape me, that's why. He slipped something in my drink, and he almost got away with it.
I'm sorry.
There's jerks in rich neighborhoods, too, Eric. Just like there's good men and poor ones.
How would you know?
You know what? I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that. No, you shouldn't have. It's a fair enough question. I'm sure I've had a really sheltered existence. Maybe I don't have a clue how you live.
Misspelled the word sheltered, just, you know, in terms of being honest.
I'm sure you don't.
I'm sure you don't.
Do you care about me at all?
The park bench is silent for a long moment, and she searches deep into his eyes.
I can't. I can't let myself care about you. Because of where you live?
That, yes, and other things.
Good.
What? She stands up, and he, because he's a gentleman, also stands.
Now we're getting somewhere.
Show me where you live, Eric Mahoney. Because I want to meet your grandmother and prove to you that I'm not as shallow as you think I am.
It's not just where I live, Cor.
First things first. Come on.
Wait a moment.
What?
What was his name?
Whose name?
The guy. With the umpteen billion-dollar company. Who puts stuff in people's drinks.
Benjamin Jason Spencer III. Why?
Just wondering. No reason.
Okay, side note. While the name Seth just came out of nowhere, Benjamin Jason Spencer III, three of the guys that made my life difficult, two of them in 5th and 6th grade, one of them in 7th grade, shared those names. So, no last names were included to protect the guilty. But anyway, moving on. Eric was just wondering. He's got a dangerous look in his eye.
I don't see him anymore.
Glad to hear it. Well, shall we?
They start jogging back the way Eric had come, towards the bus stop. We pull away to watch them run, and as we do, they get that look in their faces again. The look of people enjoying being together and not caring about the world around them. Cut to exterior, City Park, day. Eric and Cordelia jogging out of the park, down to the bus stop. I think I spelled bus stop wrong. Cut to exterior, bus, day. Eric and Cordelia's reflection in the bus window. She laughs at a joke we can't hear. We're probably listening to some fun, appropriate pop song. Cut to exterior. Eric's hood day. That's how I wrote it. Eric and Cordelia stepping off the bus, waving to the driver, because people do that, and walking up a dusty sidewalk.
Is this the vampire mobile?
She points at Eric's aging Corolla.
The one and only.
She bends over to look in the window, and his Burger King crown from their first date is hanging off the rearview mirror. Because that's likely, and also possibly illegal. You're not supposed to block your view. Anyway, she looks back at him with a melting smile.
What can I say, lady? Yeah, you make me feel royal.
She takes his hand as they keep walking. I didn't say it was a great script. Cut to exterior, Lutz Junkyard, day. They stroll past the Lutz Junkyard sign. Cordelia starts laughing.
The dog knows karate?
Lutz just joking. I've seen the dog in action, and his style's more kung fu than karate. Maybe a little ninjutsu?
That's a reference to my life, because I was taking ninjutsu at the time. And I took some more of it later, but that's not what this we're about here. She punches him on the shoulder. Cut to exterior, Lute's Junkyard, day. Lute has his head under an old Cadillac hood. Spelled the word Cadillac wrong. Seriously? Two L's, one D, you moron. Singing an Irish drinking song. Or Eric and Cordelia approach from the rear.
And they called her the Irish Rover. Any knights around here? Got a lady needs rescuing.
Lute doesn't take his head out of the engine when he answers.
A distressed damsel? Why, that's right up my alley. Do we know the lady in question?
Just a simple scullery maid, my lord.
The ratchet sounds coming from the hood stop, and then an oil-smeared face appears. Lute gapes for a moment, and then breaks out his fondest smile.
Bless my stars and tax the colonies. Your vision, my dear.
The sweetest summer flower this humble yard has ever seen.
Boy, he's quick on his feet, isn't he?
Why, Sir Pinkney, you'll make me blush.
Either you're severely lost, my lady, or you're Miss Cordelia.
Right on both counts.
Lute takes a moment to wipe his hands on a clean rag before he walks up.
I am at Miss Cordelia, if you please, and I'm at a severe loss.
Oh, how's that, dear heart?
She does blush as he takes her hand and kisses it, as only a knight can.
I fear I'm at a loss for words. Your graciousness is overwhelming.
Stop laughing, all right? I know it's sappy. Eric looks from one to the other in exasperation.
Do I have time for a quick snack? Y'all gonna be a while?
Hush, boy. If I taught you nothing, introduce me to the charming damsel.
How can I introduce you if I hush?
He's liked this rather a lot, isn't he?
Every moment.
Yeah, fine. Cordelia, don't call me Cordy Worthington. May I introduce you to the closest thing I have to a father, Sir Lieutenant Buford Pinkney.
Decorated member retired of Her Majesty's Royal Air Force. Knighted by the Queen herself. Yada, yada, yada.
A knight?
That's what the sir means, Cordy.
Pay no attention to the rebel, my dear.
He takes her arm, leading her into the junkyard like it was Buckingham Palace, a model of poise and dignity. Cordelia loves it and goes happily.
I'd be happy to tell you about the experience, my dear. It was a good 40 years ago, you see, but I remember if it was just yesterday.
They walk off, leaving Eric behind. He watches, amused, but his grin fades away as he looks around at the junk, at the dirt.
You're not making it easy to let you go, Cor.
Cut to interior, Eric's house, day. Now the real test, meeting Grandma. Eric and Cordelia walk down the hall, looking around the corner to where Grams is sitting on the leather sofa watching television. If you remember, the runner I have in the show is that every time we see Grandma, she's watching television, and whatever's going on the television is related to what's going on in the script. So you can guess that, of all things, the TV movie is Reservoir Dogs. I'm just kidding, it's The Little Mermaid. Cordelia, peeking around the corner, sees this and leans back, biting her lip and rolling her eyes.
What? Nothing.
Eric leans around the corner.
Grams?
Yes, there.
Remember, it's Katharine Hepburn.
I have someone I want you to meet.
Well, I hope they're nice.
She hoists herself out of her rocking chair and puts on her glasses. Eric comes all the way around the corner, tugging a bit to get Cordelia to follow him.
I've actually been hoping the same about you, ma'am. Grandma, may I present Cordelia Worthington?
Cordelia smiles, wanting to be liked. Grams walks up to her and peers at her over her glasses for a long moment.
My goodness, you're slender, child. However do you do it?
At this, Cordelia laughs and throws her arms around the older woman.
Thank you. Oh, thank you so much.
Grams starts laughing with her.
Eric, wherever did you find her? She's a treasure.
The two sudden best friends start gabbling about the house while Eric stands back and watches.
That's what I've been telling everybody.
Now there are tears in his eyes. Fade to exterior, Eric's house, night. Cordelia and Eric walk out the front door in the early evening.
Don't wait up, Grams. You know you need your beauty sleep.
Cordelia, hit him, if you please.
Cordelia hits Eric a sharp one on the arm.
Ow!
Thank you, dear.
Eric, she's wonderful. They're both wonderful. Do you have any idea how lucky you are? He looks around at the shabby house and the old car.
Yeah, lucky.
She sits down on the cracked concrete step in a sudden huff. He sits next to her.
You don't know a heck of a lot about anything, do you? No, I don't suppose I do.
Eric Mahoney, I'm sorry that your father and mother died, but Lute and Grams beat out my parents hands down.
How can you say that?
You get to know them. See if I'm lying.
Wait, I forgot. You're not going to get to know them, are you?
Yeah, I don't think so. All right. Where do you want to go to talk about it?
What?
The other things. We've proven that where you live doesn't freak me out, haven't we?
I guess.
How can you do it, though? If we had a future, Cor... My parents could pay for the wedding, Eric.
But I couldn't pay for your life.
I won't even suggest the obvious. You'd never take money from my father.
No,
not a chance. I would take you any way I could get you, Eric Mahoney. Even here. But you could do so much better than this.
I knew it. I knew it wasn't enough for you.
It's not about me, Eric. This isn't enough for you. He's silent for a long moment.
You like stories?
Fine. I got a story for you. I'll explain how things are for me. It's not about a mermaid, is it?
What?
Never mind. Anyway, once upon a time, there was a poor country mouse. He wasn't content with being like everybody else. He saw the birds flying up in the sky, and he wanted to be like them. Eric stands up, takes a step away from her, continuing with his back turned. So he tries and tries to grow wings, and finally something starts sprouting from his little shoulders. He got his wings. He can fly with the birds now. But they're these black, leathery things. They're not real wings at all, and the birds won't have them. And they tell him to get lost. He turns to face her again. So the pathetic creature tried to go back to the animal world, but they didn't want him either. You're different now, they said. Get away from us. So they called it a bat, and they drove it away. And it became the loneliest creature around. He kicks at a stone on the ground before meeting her eyes. I can't rise to your world, Cor. If I try, I'll just lose my own. She looks at him and then stands and holds him. By now both are crying.
Tell me the other thing, Eric. Tell me who put this crap in your head. Tell me who told you not to believe in yourself.
It's a long moment before he answers.
My mom didn't die, Cor. At least, as far as I know, she hasn't.
She moves back to look in his eyes.
What? My dad died, like I said, but my mother, she didn't die. She just up and left when I was 10. Dad was making a fair living. He was still alive. But it wasn't enough for her. Dad was never rich enough, so she left to find someone who was.
Oh, God, and your father? He has to walk away before he can talk about this.
He really loved her. I mean, he really loved her. And he couldn't handle life once she left. He crawled into a bottle and he never came out. He was dead almost 2 years later. He had nothing left to live for.
So that's why.
Yeah, that's why.
Eric, I would never do that to you.
I know that, but like you said, it's not about you. I don't know how to believe in myself, Cor, and rather than taking the chance...
At least now I understand.
Yeah, make you feel any better?
No.
Sorry about that.
For me, it's respect.
What?
Now he sits down on the steps, while she gets up and walks around. You're afraid nobody will ever truly love you.
I'm afraid nobody will ever have the slightest respect for me.
Right at this moment, her cell phone starts ringing. Without looking at it, Cordelia pulls it from her pocket and tosses it to Eric. Stick that away somewhere, will you? He puts it in his back pocket, and we can hear just the muted rings for another few moments, until they stop.
What do you mean by that?
I mean I don't want to answer my phone right now. Not that, you goofball. She finds a little smile somewhere. Well, if you get to be exasperating. I mean that all my life, everything making up Cordelia Amanda Worthington was defined by her daddy's money. If I wanted something, daddy made it happen. If I got into trouble, daddy made it go away. You know what I would give for that kind of attention? You know what I would give to change it all? Just live a normal life? Isn't it what everybody wants, to have it all? You keep thinking that. Is it worth having everything when you don't know who you are? I got straight A's because daddy wanted me to. I went to Harvard and passed the law review because daddy wanted me to. I should have known you were a lawyer. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not anything. Even what I was going to be, I don't think I want even that. I'll bite. What is it? Oh, daddy's busy pulling strings, and if the Worthington fortune has anything to say about it, little Cordy's going to be a U.S. senator. Well, that's great. Isn't it? Is it? How should I know? My entire life is nothing but someone else's dreams. Except you. She sits right down in the dirt in front of him, leaning her head on his knees. You're the first thing I've ever wanted, just for me. A tear rolls down her face. You'll have to find loot if you want a knight in shining armor. I just want you, Eric. I'm sorry, Cor. She nods, accepts it, and stands up. So that's it. Well, is it too much to ask for a ride back to the King's Palace? No, this isn't the best neighborhood to try and get a cab at night. He slowly gets to his feet and walks off into the darkness. Hopefully my car will start. Oh no! Is this the end? It can't be the end. We're only about 2/3 of the way through the script. But it's funny, as I read this, I honestly did not remember what had happened to Eric's parents. I knew it was something terrible, but... And, it's... The script remains cheesy, and yet at the same... And it's just too easy, like the, we met 5 minutes ago and now we're in love, and yet... I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of rom-coms out there that kind of pull the same trick. But, yeah, I'm having fun reading it. And I'm actually looking forward to reading the last 50 pages because, like I say, I don't remember how it turns out. I'm pretty sure there's a happy ending. But, hey, if you want to find that out, you're going to have to come back in a couple of weeks and we'll find out together, huh? In the meantime, own the stage that you're on. And, believe in yourself. I think that before I sign off, that story that Eric just told about the bat, he didn't make that up. I didn't make that up. That's it's possibly could be attributed to somebody, or maybe it's just one of those, you know, it like a fable that's been around for ages and ages. But I remember reading that story in elementary school, how the bat. Maybe it started out as a mouse, I don't remember, but this creature really, really wanted to fly, and so, you know, figured out how it could sprout wings, and once it sprouted wings, it was no longer an animal, so the animals didn't want it, but it was too late for it to be considered a bird, so the birds didn't want it, so they called it a bat, and it didn't belong to either world, and occasionally when I think about that story, it makes me very sad, because if there's one thing in life that I find horrible, well, there's many, but the one I think that it's the worst, in my opinion, is being lonely. So, the reason why I bring that up, well, that's a little more about the script, that's why that's in there, is that's how Eric can define his position. As much as Lute and Grams love him, he's pretty lonely. And given what his mother did, I think we can understand why. I think we're all, can all perhaps be agreed that what Eric really needs is some decent therapy, but maybe Cordelia will help with that, because it's a fictional story. And in fictional stories, people live happily ever after without the need to resort to therapy, for the most part. Anyway, I'm rambling, and I will stop now, at least for another couple of weeks. Again, own your stage. You can do that, whatever stage that is. I want to hear it. And we'll talk to you later.